Welcome to Healthy Brain, Happy Body, a podcast from the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. I'm Dr. Saul Rosenthal, a health psychologist in the Boston area, and your host as we investigate the incredible connections between brain and body. Today, we continue our series on creativity with the second part of my discussion with Dr. Rex Jung, a clinical neuropsychologist who has spent years studying the physiology of creativity. Last time, we talked about how creativity is studied and the brain areas involved in the creative process. In this episode, we discuss pathology and creativity, what the rise of artificial intelligence might mean about creativity, and where he thinks the field should go. So we're back with Dr. Rex Jung, and we've been talking about creativity, and we're going to continue the conversation and start with the question about whether creativity can be learned. So a lot of people want to be more creative. Are there ways to make a brain a more creative brain? I mean, obviously, you've got to practice. That improves things. But can we change the brains in ways that also improve creativity in addition to all the practice?
I think the best advice, I guess, I would give that the highly creative people have some domain expertise. I mean, you're usually picking one area to be creative within advised so that you can acquire that knowledge that's necessary to put ideas together in novel and useful ways. The old saw of 10 years or 10,000 hours probably holds. You do need at least 10 years, perhaps longer to some people. I mean, it's a bell-shaped curve. Some people shorter, some people longer to acquire enough information to start putting it together in novel and useful ways. So picking an area to be creative with, and people have different talents and aptitudes that they bring to the table, but discovering what those are, trying different things and seeing what you're good at is important. Some of the advice also is to that I've found to be helpful is to find that downtime that is important to allow your mind to wander, to play with those ideas in a way that allows them to collide together in ways that they otherwise would not. We find that, and this is different for different people. Some people, you know, like the hot showers and the Archimedes bath where the eureka comes from. Some people like exercise and find that to be very meditative. Some people, I mean, I always joke, I have a large lawn to mow. And so that back and forth with the lawnmower can become very meditative for me, and I can think about all sorts of things while I'm mowing the lawn. It's a very good time for me. Some people awakening from a dream state, very important for them during that liminal period where they are between sleep and wakefulness, that they can emerge with a great idea. So it differs, but having that time that you can reliably allow that default mode to sing, if you will, is important, and becoming comfortable with that. In this age of iPhones and everything and email and all of the distractors, I think it's important to try to get away from that and find some time away from the distractions. Those are some pretty good suggestions. I was asked to write a book on creativity many years ago, and they always wanted some. I had to give the retainer back I couldn't do it. I mean, they really were pushing towards recommendations. Of course, all these books really want a recipe for how to increase your creativity, and I just couldn't do it. It really is quite individual, I think, for a person, but finding that space that you can cultivate your skill set, and then finding that space that then you can allow ideas to percolate, I think is particularly important.
Yeah, I think a lot of the listeners will be interested or engaged with biofeedback or neural feedback or some other kind of bio-neuromodulation. And those of us who've worked with people who are creative, I would suspect that most of us are really working around trying to help people manage anxiety, which interferes, of course, with at this yes. every level.
Yeah.
But there's also some thought that calming the brain, reducing anxiety, does seem to improve the quality of the creativity, not just the ability to do it. So there's probably something going on there.
I think that relates to that default mode network. It's really hard to get into that internal thought space, that introspective space, if you are anxious and worried about this, that, and everything. How are you going to really start generating new ideas if you're worried about your relationships, if you're worried about how people are thinking about you, if you're worried about this, that, and everything else? And that constant inner voice cannot be quieted. And I think biofeedback and things of that nature can be particularly helpful in creating a work space within which that can start to flourish.
Well, the hot topic, of course, of today is artificial intelligence, and there have to be implications for creativity. What does AI reveal about creativity in general, and maybe about creativity for humans?
I think it's getting a little scary in that AI is creating some things that are novel, useful, and surprising, which is the definition of creativity. So I think we're getting kind of close to things that are by definition creative as far as humans appreciate them, and particularly since we are working with LLMs, large language modules. The thing about these AIs is they have access to all the information, they have access to all the language. So if you can set the parameters to degrade the connectivity matrices of the words or the phrases that are going to intersect with each other in a rational way, you can create a default mode network in these LLMs and still have it work in terms of appropriate language, and some real novelty can be created. I read a poem the other day that was attached to the end of a research paper that was quite good, surprisingly good, scarily good. I am not averse to, and now these LLMs, these AIs are starting to fool humans in terms of whether humans are creating these things, or if you had to guess whether a human or an AI created this, it's really hard to tell. It used to be just last few years, they always had to have a human in the loop to help create the output. There is always a human helping to constrain the parameters for a musical piece to emerge or a poem to emerge. That's not the case anymore. So So two things come to mind. These are LLMs, large language modules, and language represents a very important part of human experience, but it represents a relatively small percentage of the real estate of the human brain. Mm-hmm. So it may be easiest to hack that from an AI perspective. Visual creativity is going to be quite a bit harder The visual cortex occupies almost a third of the human brain, visual parietal cortex. And this has always been a hard problem for AI. And AI is getting better, but visual creativity may be a bit harder to hack. And if I am correct in that creativity is not just a human endeavor, but a mammalian or species capacity that's important to reasoning and problem solving, adaptive problem solving in an evolutionary constraints. The problems that AI solves may be limited to human problem sets. And if we expand beyond human problem sets, that may be where they fall short. So I'm hopeful and very optimistic about AI solving lots of very interesting problems, like novel drug target, things like that. You can put all the molecules into a thing and jumble it up, and AIs will find some nice combinations that it would take decades for us to test otherwise. But in terms of creativity, they may just be hacking our perception of what language we perceive as being interesting and therefore creative, unexpected, as opposed to actually adaptive and revolutionary.
To me, that raises another very interesting but off-topic question, which is about the importance of language. So as you said, the visual parts of our brain take up a lot more real estate than the language parts of our brain, and yet in the civilization in which we live, language is dominant.
Language is king. Yeah.
And so what I was going to say was it may be easier to fool us with good sounding language. That may be an unfair term. But certainly what you're suggesting is it's a lot harder to pass the creativity test visually than verbally.
I would hypothesize that. I may be wrong. And, you know, these AIs are getting more sophisticated and doing, I can't remember, deep fakes of, right, of visual stuff too. So people are getting faked out about this as well. But in terms of creative aspects of that, I think that will be a little harder to push things forward. It might be easy to emulate something that's out there, like a star, a president or prime minister that is saying something that they didn't actually say. That emulation is probably easy to fake us out in that manner. But something more sophisticated in terms of new and useful and surprising, I think that'll be harder. Mm. I suspect that'll be harder. I know I'm being rather nebulous in my response, well, but I think you're right. I think we're both right that language is just become so predominant in our culture and society that it is more hackable. Vision is certainly the most important thing that all creatures, mammals, rely on. But it's just such a base level thing that we take it for granted. Language is really what's pushing our culture forward in many regards too. So the fact that the AIs and the LLMs are working successfully in that domain may speak poorly of human prospects more than anything else.
I was going to ask you to predict what's going to be happening 10 to 20 years from now in the world of creativity, but I may not do that at this point. So bringing things together, assuming we will be here 10 to 20 years from now, who knows? Your career has covered a lot of different areas and has brought a lot of different areas together. Is there one idea from your work, particularly about creativity, that you'd want us to take?
Well, the one idea is my most recent idea, and it gets to your last question, you know, where will we be in 10 or 20 years? The main idea, the main conclusion that I came away from when I kind of stopped doing active research, neuroscientific research, was that we really have crappy measures, and we really need to move beyond this divergent thinking framework. We have some measures of insight, which we didn't talk about. They're even worse than measures of divergent thinking. Measures of personality, openness, are good psychometrically, but we're really capturing very little of the variance of creative cognition. Imagination is one thing that I've called for in my most recent paper. That I think is worth producing, pursuing. I just don't think that we're capturing a lot of the variance, and we're kind of stuck as a field, just doing studies in divergent thinking, doing studies in insight, doing studies in openness, and not looking for new ways to capture variance in how humans and other species, frankly, are creating novelty and utility as a reasoning capacity of the brain. I think we could, in 10 or 20 years, I'm hopeful that we will have made some strides in doing that.
Hopefully we will. Is there anything else you'd want us to know about creativity at this point?
It's a topic worth looking at. I pulled up a paper that is from a group of neurologists and neuroscientists. It was in JAMA, Journal of the American Medical Association, mapping neuroimaging findings of creativity and brain disease onto common brain circuits. So, I mean, they've done, it's just masterful, but it's basically putting a bookend to everything that I just told you. It's like looking at, again, divergent thinking measures and all the research that's been done, and then mapping it onto patients with traumatic brain injuries, patients with frontotemporal dementia, and they're finding this common right frontopole region that is basically deactivated in patients with high creativity. I mean, this would be a focal point for neural stimulation, potentially TDCS, for example, to transiently deactivate the right frontal pole if you want to increase novelty generation, is kind of a cool idea. This is really great research pulling together neurologists. I've seen studies in neurosurgical patients as well, looking at very fundamental brain processes involved in creative cognition. So we're getting to the end of this paradigm of looking at divergent thinking and putting a bookend on it. But we can increase divergent thinking. We can increase, I mean, perhaps insight through brain stimulation or diseases, and we know where in the brain this is happening. There's not much more to pursue fruitfully in this area. So it's time to create a paradigm shift so that we can start looking in new directions to be creative in our creativity research.
Mm-hmm. Well, we will see where it goes in the next few years. I want to thank you so much for joining us here on Healthy Brain, Happy Body.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Saul.
You're listening to Healthy Brain, Happy Body. I'm your host, Dr. Saul Rosenthal. Our guide today was Dr. Rex Jung. You can find out more about him and his work in the show notes or at www.rexjung.com. Subscribe to this podcast by clicking the Subscribe Here link or wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoy Healthy Brain, Happy Body, please rate us and leave reviews at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Reviews help us get more listeners, and that's more people who can learn about and benefit from biofeedback, neural feedback, and other mind-body approaches to health. Also, let us know what you think by sending us email. Our address is healthybrain@nrbs.org. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is produced and edited by me. The theme music is Catch It by Coma Media. It is a production of the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. Go to nrbs.org to find out more about the organization, including our trainings, monthly webinars, and yearly conference. All opinions expressed are those of our guests and not the NRBS. This podcast is not meant to replace advice from qualified healthcare providers. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is supported by the sponsors of NRBS and by the International Society of Neuroregulation and Research. Be sure to join us on our next episode as we continue to explore the keys to our well-being on Healthy Brain, Happy Body.